Satrikal, Assalamu Alaikum, Namaste, and welcome. You are listening to a show called A Woman's World. My name is Purvi Shah, and I'm excited to bring you this show about women's dreams and challenges facing our community. Though a majority of our world and leaders in our communities and homes, women's voices are often unheard. This show aims to change that. Each week, we will delve into a new story of women making dreams come true. We hope to tap new experiences and create a ground for dialogue and change. As a poet and changemaker myself, I hope to help create this ground with this show. You can read more about my work and writing, including my book of poetry, Terrain Tracks, at www.purvipoets.net, that's PURVIPOETS.NET, or follow me on Twitter at purvipoets. As you know, our first show focused on sexual violence, the second on a love of language and how we write our dreams, the next on dancing and new Kathak choreography. Today, I'm excited to have you all here with me as I speak with teacher and improv creator Seema Sabnani. Welcome, Seema, to A Woman's World.
Thank you, Purvi. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited for folks to hear about your wonderful work teaching and all the activism and creativity that you put into it. I know you work as an instructor facilitator for the Sadie Nash Leadership Project, which is an amazing program for girls. Can you tell us a little bit about the program and what you do in it?
Yeah, no, I'd love to. The reason why I definitely love and enjoy working at Sadie Nash is because it really focuses on education that really isn't covered in your regular public school curriculum. So it covers everything from leadership, social justice principles, feminism, community building, activism. And it works with an age group of 18 to 24. And I have the opportunity to have a chance to facilitate different leadership models or programs. And I definitely facilitate. It's not about teaching in the traditional sense. Just facilitating that safe space to have women explore these different components, which really excites me and kind of motivates me to do the work that I do.
Interesting. So what do you feel like makes it different to be a facilitator as opposed to a teacher? Because I'm sure these young women probably look up to you as a role model in some ways. So how do you see that as different?
Right. I think one of the most important things is the idea that a facilitator walks into the classroom just helping. They're on the same level as the students in the sense that there's no like power, or at least there's hopefully not a power like hierarchy between teacher and student. It's the idea that where can we make a space to really have a democratic discourse. So it really derives a lot from the things that I do in the philosophy is from Paulo Freire, from the Theater of the Oppressed. And it's all about the idea that really empowering the people that you're working with to guide what they want to learn, to guide what they want to teach, and guide even the actual facilitation process. So you're really in there kind of cultivating this discourse, but you're an equal person learning in this process. So in that sense, it's not that traditional public school model where teacher knows all and student is like empty vessel just to kind of learn.
Interesting. So it seems like it's more like this idea of exchange and, you know, everybody can grow in some way. And also everybody has something to share.
Right. And that's exactly it. It's one of the things that brings me into education and teaching. And it's the model of popular education. And that's, I realize in almost all the jobs I've done in different non-for-profits, it's always been this equal exchange, no matter who I was working with in sense of direct services. There was always something that I learned equally back. So it was kind of a really beautiful process. So I feel like I'm just incorporating that to the next level.
So let me back up a minute because I want folks to know a little bit more about you and I want to hear too. What motivated you to do this kind of popular education work and to be part of the nonprofit community to begin with?
Well, I'm the youngest of four women. In my family, yes. I have three older sisters and my mom has always been in very loud, outspoken woman, and it was always very opinionated. And so I knew growing up that I'm like, okay, I want to do something. How can I voice out and kind of speak up for certain injustices that I would always see or even face directly? And so I was so sure I was going to go into law. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to fight in the legal system, blah, blah, blah. And then I realized one of my first jobs in Chicago, which is where I grew up, was at Upnagar, which is a domestic violence agency that caters to Asian women. And I realized that when I was working with the women in the situation, It was really so much about a learning experience. It was more educational than it was even in the paradigm of the legal world. And so that really motivated me to kind of explore the educational realm and the idea of what it looks like for equal exchange. And so the more I kind of was seeking out different theories and pedagogies, the more things like popular education came up and the Brecht Forum and Top Left Theater. So it was kind of baby steps into that.
That's amazing. So for our listeners, to expand just a little bit, UPNAGAR is an anti-domestic violence organization, part of the Sisterhood of South Asian Anti-Violence Organizations. And one of the things that is part of UPNAGAR's almost unique programming is that it has a shelter, which it really is catered to our community. So when you speak about kind of learning from the survivors that you were interacting with, what were some of the things that you felt like you learned?
Right. I think the biggest thing is that everyone, especially the women that I worked with and the young women as well, was that they all had a voice and they all had an idea of where they wanted to go and what they wanted. It was just that they needed that outlet and no one had really had a chance to really ask them what they wanted or what they needed in that situation because of obviously power issues. So I think what I learned from that is the idea of advocacy and the idea that it's self-advocacy and that no matter what, if given the chance and given the space, women can empower themselves to be their own advocates. And I think in the sense of education as that tool, that's that commonality for me is that the idea of how do you advocate for yourself or how do you become empowered to advocate for yourself? So that was the huge experience. So even like one specific story that comes to mind is this one, it was actually a younger child of the young woman who was staying at the shelter. And she had so much to say. And we had an art therapist, which we were very fortunate for funding for that. And just seeing the things that they would paint and write about was the idea that they just needed space to be able to share that work or share what they were going through. And that was really, I think, that critical moment where I realized that if there could be a forum or a space that people can actually advocate and young women of color can advocate and share their experiences, it's so powerful.
That's amazing. I mean, a couple of things spring to my mind. This idea that, you know, advocate has the word voice in it, and that's an essential component. And also this power of art to be healing and to really get to what you're truly feeling, or catharsis.
Yeah.
So then how did you end up moving from Chicago to New York?
I know. Well, New York always, it's always been that kind of beacon of arts and culture. And I feel like I definitely had a very stereotypical experience where what was expected of certain jobs were, you know, like you could go into law, education was even acceptable. But I always had a passion for some sort of expression, artistic expression. So, but it was always more of a hobby. So I actually first gravitated toward dance and doing a little drama and theater, but it was always kind of on the side. So New York was always this idea that, you know, if anyone was doing exciting work and definitely South Asian women, it had to be in New York City. This is where everyone gravitates towards. So I always knew, even in high school, that I would come to New York. So yeah, I made sure after college, after working at UPNAGAR, I was kind of plotting my way. Like, how can I get to New York? So a good friend
of mine. I'm sure your family must have been a little bit sad. And it was like, I have this magnetic pull I can't avoid.
No, it's true. But the good thing is everyone eventually moved to East Coast. So
nice. Yeah,
so it worked out.
Nice to have that.
Yeah, exactly. So family's close by.
So let's talk a little bit. I'm going to go back to the teaching at some point, but you mentioned a little bit about dance and theater. And so I want to hear, you know, what have you been doing then in New York in terms of your artwork? And did you, and also did you feel like you did have the space to do it immediately when you came? Or did you feel like you also had to still kind of do the things that were expected first?
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, I definitely never saw jobs in the sense of being artistic as like a job that you can actually create money from and that's it. So I definitely always felt like I was compromising to an extent that I was always, I mean, I had my own compromises. I was willing to compromise and I'm not. So if, as long as I chose jobs or professions, that was something that I felt strongly about. So one of the first things I did when I moved to New York City was work at an adult education center that created opportunities for people who had not had a chance to finish even their high school diploma, so GED program. So it was something that I always still felt like that's what always kind of kept me in the non-for-profit world. But I was always trying to figure out a way, where can I make space to be artistic? So I wouldn't, you know, attend the Asian American Writers Workshop and the open mic nights and maybe do a little spoken word and kind of add in certain things. But it was never, I never felt confident to really do it full time or think that this could be a profession until only recently, where I finally feel like I'm getting more and more confident. The more classes I've been taking, the more realms that I've been exploring, to be like, okay, this can be done. So
what do you think held you back from feeling confident?
Yeah, I think it was, I mean, two things. One is that it's not rarely talked about. You rarely see non-traditional women of color, South Asian women who are, this is their full-time job. Like, I think only very recently you have a couple of, you know, women who are coming to light, like the Mindy Show is one example. I'm like, oh, this is great. This is a South Asian female who's successful and making a living out of it. But growing up, I definitely did not see any women of color or young women or South Asian descent doing things that are non-traditional, like from spoken word to even dancing, unless it was traditional dance form. That was even in comedy or anything else. So I think it was not seeing that. And then even having the confidence to finally be like, okay, I'm, you know, I'm old enough. I can do this. Nothing's really holding me back. So it's like, I got to try at some point or another. So
yeah, it's like you kind of recognize you have to be your own model,
right,
because that doesn't exist for you.
Yeah.
So what did you do? And you talked about some classes that you've been taking. And so how did you get started in terms of doing more drama and theater and improv work? And can you tell folks what improv is, just so they know?
Yeah. So the funny thing, I always think of improv as like the lazy artist in me that speaks to me in so many ways, because it's like I've done a lot of writing classes and so forth, and I love it. But I feel like in sense of discipline, and especially working full time a lot of the times, it always pushes and pulls you in other ways. So you never have as much time. But I realize with improv, and all improv is and defined, is this idea of free form, of reacting to your environment and using your own personal reactions and feelings to develop or see where that goes, and whether it's in drama or singing or even movement. So improv is just free form, at least the way I define that.
And it comes from improvisation, right? So it's unplanned.
Unplanned, exactly. So that's where the lazy artist in me is like, yes, this is so simple.
You don't have to
do this. Exactly. I can definitely do this. But yeah, so I've recently started taking classes at Upright Citizens Brigade. And it was wonderful. And it's a great, you know, just like having a chance to venture up. But I am usually the one person of color in that class. And when the great thing is that they're definitely increasing their diversity, they have a diversity program, but it's, you still do not see that many women of color or even just people of color in improv or on the comedy circuit. But there are out there. Don't get me wrong. I've been definitely researching, and you know, as you look out there, you're like, oh, there are women who are doing this and stand up.
So how do you think that makes a difference? You know, what difference does it make if you're the only person who's like South Asian or a person of color in that class?
Right. Oh, I think in a lot of things it demystifies or de-exotifies what, like, the women of color, the South Asian experiences. So perfect example, a lot of the times the accent, the South Asian accent, is used as...
Go for it.
But it's very comedic, right? But it's this idea, it's a caricature. It's usually done in a caricature, and or it's always in some extreme form. So it's like, I rarely see people of that heritage or experience sharing their own experiences and reacting towards things that would just be just like what every other person goes through. So like when you see in Hollywood these main figures who, you know, have love and hate and this and that and all these different experiences, when do you get a chance to see a South Asian woman or any woman of color having these same multi-layered experiences? So I think even doing improv is a way of being revolutionary, because it's just demystifying that you're not exotic, you're not the other, you're just like everyone else in these shared experiences that we all go through. And so that excites me just to even see. And so
do you feel like when you get up in the improv group that people expect you to talk in a certain way or expect you to kind of play or put on certain characters?
Right. I don't, but I mean, I feel like it comes up with other people doing it. So I'm always like,
oh, interesting. Yeah, like that, other people play those characters in that way.
Or like the nail salon worker or this.
Oh, and I'm interesting.
Like, ooh. And there's, to me, these power dynamics that come up. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, wow, I wonder if this is even brought up. But it's interesting because it's improv. So they're just reacting right to what they see. So what excites me about it is that so recently, and Burvy's part of this, recently we all as a collective started an Asian women's improv group. And so it's been exciting because it's just interesting to finally have a chance to be around all women of color and just see what comes up and what's natural. So I think that is in itself exciting just because it's not like, or at least I don't feel the pressure that we have to talk about something or not, but we might have some shared stories and maybe we don't. And it's like whatever comes up that way, I think will be really cool to see and watch.
Great. Well, we're going to talk more about shared stories and revolutionary storytelling in just a minute. But in the meantime, we're going to take a short commercial break.